Shalom Aleichem, Mishnah Yomi is holding in the third chapter of Rosh Hashanah, Mishnah 8. Finishing up now the third parak. Now yesterday in Mishnah Zion, we talked about two guys walking by in the shul. They heard the shofar blow. One had kavana, zekivin libo. He directed his heart, his attention to the mitzvah. V'zeilokivin libo. But the guy who didn't pay attention isn't Yotzi the mitzvah, did not do a mitzvah. Now in Mishnah Ches, we talk about similar situations in Jewish history. V'hayo, and it was, kasher yirim Moshe yodo, when Moshe raised his arm, Gvar Yisrael, the Jews were winning the war. This is the famous war with Amalek in Shmos, Exodus chapter 17. When Moshe was raising his hands, they would win. This is called getting the upper hand. V'chi yodov shemoshe osod nechama oshavim nechama. Can it be possible that the hands of Moshe Rabbeinu, that's what makes the war or breaks the war? This, literally, osot is makes and shovrot is breaks. So this is where make it or break it in English comes from, is this Mishnah right here. So could it be that the hands of Moshe are actually determining the outcome of the war? Ela lo marlecha. So really, the true meaning that the Torah is teaching you here is kol zman shehayu Yisrael mistaklim klopei mola, when the Jews were looking upwards. Mishabdin at libam leviyam shebashamayim, and they were humbling their hearts to their Father in heaven. Hayimit Gabim, that's when they would win. So the hands of Moshe going up to the heavens was a reminder of the Jews to have emunah in the heavens. You know, not to have, you know, you need to have a degree of preparation and pride of the soldiers in war. They need to know what they're doing and be good at what they're doing. But the real determinant of victory is our emunah, our belief and our faith and our trust in God, not in the weapons and the bravery of the soldiers. Imlov, and if they weren't directing their heart towards heaven, hayu noflim, God forbid, they would be losing the war. Kayotze bedavar, the Mishnah goes on, a similar case, ataomer aselecha sraf, make for you a burning snake, v'simoto alnes, and put it up on a stick. Ve'achkola nashuch harato v'chay, and the people who are bitten by the snakes will see this and they will live and not die of the snake poison. Now this is the famous incident in Bamidbar. There were people complaining about the man, about the manna from heaven, and they were bitten by snakes and some of them died, and Moshe prayed to save the people, and Hashem said, well, the people be saved by looking up at this metal snake that you make. Now this is bizarre, but the whole point of the snake, we see, is not that that had any healing power in itself. As the mission explains, v'chi nachash meimit, or nachash mechaye, could it be a metal snake up on a stick, which is, by the way, where the medical profession gets their standard classical emblem from? Can that make people die or make people live looking at a snake on a pole? Ela bismanchi shu mistaklim klopei mola. It was a reminder to look up to heaven and have emuna that this illness they got was from Hashem, because they've been complaining about Hashem. So they had the emunah and do tshuva. So then, mishabdin the libam levim shemayim, they'd humble their hearts to their Father in heaven. Hayim mitrapim, those people who did so would get healed. Im lav hayu nimukim, if not, they would nebuch wither away and die of the poison. So we see, like we said, by the shofar case, the Megillah case yesterday, that two people can go through the same exact experience and have completely different outcomes. You could have had people looking at the snake and being like, oh, that's just some silly thing that Moshe made, what's going on? And they would die of the illness. And some people look at the snake and realize, I'm looking up, I need to look up to heaven, I need to look up to heaven and look inside myself and see what's going wrong and do tshuva and try to fix myself, and they'd be zoche, they'd be worthy of being healed. Now the mission concludes, cherish shote vekoton, someone who's deaf and mute, he cannot communicate verbally. Shota is, he's out of his mind, he's deranged. The koton, someone who's not bar mitzvah. Ein motzin at the rabbi midei chavotan. They cannot blow shofar on behalf of other people to fulfill other people's obligation. Zeklal, this is the general rule. Kol she'ein mechuyav b'davar, someone who's not obligated to do a mitzvah. Ein motzi at the rabbi midei chavotan. He cannot do that mitzvah on behalf of other people. But conversely, we have a concept of arvus, or arvut, of guarantorship, that every Jew is a guarantor one to another. So even if a Jew already blew the shofar, and he's yotzi the mitzvah, he's done with the mitzvah, since he had to do the mitzvah at some point, he can do it again to help other people fulfill their mitzvah as well. He's a guarantor, he's an ariv for other Jews. Let's go on to chapter Dalet, Mishnah Aleph, Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah, Shachaliot B'Shabbat, if Rosh Hashanah is also Shabbos. But Mikdash Hayutoken, they used to blow the shofar in the temple of Oloba Medina, but not outside of the temple. Mishachar of Beis Mikdash Nebuch, when the temple was destroyed, Hitkin, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, he was the leader of the Jewish people at that time, Sheyehu Tokin b'chol makom sheyesh bo beitin. He made a takana that they could still blow the shofar, but only in a court. Now there's some discussion in the Mishnah of exactly what kind of court he meant. Amar Rabbi Elazar, lo hitkin Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, his takana, his enactment was only ela b'yavne bilvad, in Yavne. As we mentioned when we were discussing the Maisa between Rabban Gamliel and Yeshua, Yavne was the first stop of the Sanhedrin after they left Eretz Yisrael, and this same Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai convinced Vespasian, the Roman general and emperor, to spare Yavne and allow the Sanhedrin to meet there and reconstitute the governing body of the Jewish people. So according to Rabbi Elazar, it was only in Yavne they were allowed to blow shofar outside the temple. Amar lo, they told him, Echad Yavne, Echad kol makom, sheyesh bo beit din. It wasn't just Yavne, it was any place that had a fixed court. That court could preside over the blowing of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, which was Shabbos. Now, the concern of other places was, as we mentioned, by lulav. We're talking about Sukkot, carrying a lulav on Shabbos. Not everyone knows how to use the lulav properly, so they might carry it to the Rebbe or carry it to the shul and ask people, and they would end up carrying it in the public domain on Shabbos, which is forbidden. So it's the same concern with the shofar. Not everyone's an expert in blowing all the kolot of shofar. They might go and ask somebody. They're carrying the shofar on. They might carry it through Rishus HaRabim. So the takana was in a court. The members of the court would be careful to have the shofar there in advance, and no one's carrying anything, and everyone knows you go there to hear it, and people wouldn't be carrying it around. Now, nowadays, we don't blow the shofar at all because of this same concern. Shemi Avreinu, Arba Amos, Bishus Rabim. People might carry it on Shabbos in the public domain, which is a biblical prohibition. Yeshua Kochachem, and be well.